Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. How are you doing on this fine day, Pete?
I am doing well. I have had several cups of coffee. I'm also indulging in what can only be described as a Japanese-themed chewing gum. My favourite Japanese chewing gum. We've never discussed it on this show. And I realise I am cognizant of the fact that you guys need to know which Japanese chewing gum brand I endorse. And it's Black Black. It's a chewing gum brand that contains a lot of caffeine.
Oh, yeah. Doesn't it stain your teeth black as well? It's part of the thing.
I don't think it's part of its charm, and I'm certain that's not part of it, but right. It certainly is surprisingly black.
I don't think I've had black black. How much caffeine's in it, do you know? Is it like equivalent to a coffee or something?
All my fingernails have fallen off.
No.
I think it's probably equivalent to like a third of a coffee or something like that. I feel good though. I feel pumped. I'm ready for the show.
Oh dear. I mean, where did you get the Japanese chewing gum from? Where did you get it? Is there a shop around the corner?
Yeah, there's a little Japanese supermarket around the corner, which is gets me all of the yuzu I can drink and all of the fancy soy sauces and really expensive salad dressings. Me and you, my final meal before I left from Sendai to Tokyo. Final meal.
Yeah.
Last time we were together in one place. We had some delicious, it was like a katsui kind of thing, but with it we had unlimited shredded cabbage. And it came with this delicious kind of like mayonnaise dressing. And I was like, I want more of that. And I found it. It was this kind of like burdock and oily kind of seasoned dressing with sesame oil in it. And it's really expensive in this shop. But my God, it takes me back to those times where we enjoyed a shredded cabbage, yeah. Unlimited shredded cabbage.
Those were the days, eh? The days of unlimited shredded cabbage. I love the your memories.
Man.
Your memories of things are just the most surreal things.
It's a bit Animal Crossing, isn't it?
It is. I lived through your bizarre memories of Japan and just everything in general, to be honest, Pete. I would never have remembered the shredded cabbage or...
Exactly.
I've tried this chewing gum, Black Black, given that I am Mr. Caffeine, like I drink a staggering amount of caffeine. If I could find a way of consuming it in a whole new way, I mean, that is something that I can get excited about. So... count me in. When I go for my evening stroll after this podcast is done, I'll go and buy some. It's literally just called Black Black because the chewing gum is black,
black,
right?
Right. Yeah, it's black. And well, I mean, all chewing gum is kind of like off-white, isn't it? And then they cover it in like a flower to make it sort of a little bit more attractive and not so used. But black has some kind of food colorant in it. And also chrysanthemum oil or something weird like that.
Yeah. All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Next time
I
in Japan, you need a rush, don't get a Red Bull or a coffee, get Black Black chewing gum, a chewing gum that not even I know. And that's another thing. I live here, I've lived here 8 years now, and you still have tried like more things than I have in your many trips to Japan. I'm always amazed by that as well. I love that.
You've got to kind of try everything in a 7-Eleven or the dear departed Sunkus. Remember Sunkus?
Oh, I remember Sunkus.
I think they got eaten up by Family Mart. I think Family Mart bought all of their shops. But
they did.
They would sell this kind of... It's chewing. It's not chewing gum. It's a breath mint that is. It's like a really violently minty jelly bean. So it's got a crisp outer shell. Yeah, a crisp outer shell, a bouncy inner. And it's like a really hard sort of taut jelly inside. Utterly disgusting, utterly uneatable. But that's also one of the mint flavored candies I've eaten while in Japan. So there's another one for the list.
Why are you so nostalgic about Sunkist, right? I used to live in my first apartment in Sendai, which was just like a little shack with walls made of paper. It was awful. And I've talked about that many times. I've ranted about it. But I didn't live near a supermarket. But the only thing I had was a bakery, like Sendai's most famous, amazing bakery, a little for yeah. some reason, just around the corner, which was part of the reason I put on a lot of weight, bakery. And also a Sunkist. And I'd never shopped in Sunkist before until I lived in Sendai. And that was where I got my groceries. And the problem with Sunkist was it was rubbish because all like they had yakitori, but it was always really soggy. The rice balls were kind of hard. Nothing in there was edible. So I'm not surprised it got snapped up by Family Mart and a better, much better convenience store.
They just wanted the real estate.
Why are you a Sunkist nostalgic?
Why I just like the logo. It's the shittest logo. It's a K with a K that is wearing Wellington boots and a hat, like a baseball cap. It looks like a child going to school or on a school trip somewhere wet, wearing Wellington boots and a cap. And it looks stupid. It looks like it's been designed by the aforementioned 4-year-old.
To be fair, all convenience stores in Japan have a kind of a very simple logo.
Same aesthetic.
Sunkist got something right. Sunkist got its own unique identity. And speaking of unique, we got an interesting message this week from a guy called Matthew. The title of the email was Hilarious T-shirt. And the message reads, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I listen to you on my way to work at a Japanese youth theatre. Doesn't say where that is, but that's intriguing. A Japanese youth theatre. On my way home from work, I saw a Japanese woman walking with a shirt that said, 'You are the hand adequate.' I cannot work out what they mean. Do you have any idea? Keep up the great work, Matthew." And again, that shirt read, "You are the hand adequate." What are your thoughts, Pete? What does that mean?
Well, to be honest,
nothing crude, Pete. Nothing crude. This is a family-friendly podcast.
I am a man. It's not A, it's not B, it's not C. It will never be. But I have noticeably small hands, so I would never be able to make a concert pianist or any kind of pianist. So I think being told that I am hand adequate is actually a bit of a boon for me. I'm up for it. It's a compliment. I'm having it.
So it means you've got good hands then?
Thanks. Thanks. That's all I'm saying, guys. Thank you.
I mean, a lot of these shirts are usually translated from Japanese, right? I remember one English shirt, one of my favourites was, "Are you enjoy spring?" which sounded quite like a violent, violent thuggish remark. "Are you enjoy spring?" Yeah, I enjoy spring.
Or a mattress manufacturer.
There you go. But one of the things I thought of is this could be umai. Because the kanji, umai means like delicious, or it means like to be skilled, a bit like jozu.
Yeah.
And the kanji for that is the kanji for up and the kanji for hand. And I don't know, maybe it's in some way related to umai. Maybe they've tried to translate something like that, like "you are skilled," into English. That's my theory. That's my hypothesis. Yeah. But
why you would
really
be throwing those compliments around, I just don't know. Why does that t-shirt want people to know that they hand adequate or hand skilled or hand anything? Why are you talking about my hands, mate, you weirdo? I'm only on the train.
To be fair, what was my shirt? What was it again? You are... Oh, I can't remember. There was a shirt a few months ago in a video, and it was a really weird statement. Do you remember what it was? A black shirt.
I don't, actually. To be honest.
And on it... what was it?
Black shirt. Narrow it down, mate, for crying out loud.
I do just wear black shirts. I'll dig it out later. But it was something like... Oh, there it is. It says... Has high functionality.
I like that. It's nice. That describes the clothing, the people that are wearing it. I enjoyed a little, your house is so small that you were able to just turn around and all I could hear is the click clack of the clothing in your cupboard. Nice.
Well, I've never said, but I actually do the podcast like in my wardrobe, basically, because I discovered, Pete, that my clothes are a good insulator for sound. So People have nice. grand images of how this podcast is made. It's literally made in my wardrobe amongst a pile of clothes. That is the level. Hey, look, that is the level of the Braun Japan podcast.
I mean, we started off back in the day. I think when you lived somewhere else, you'd made this beautiful kind of isolating vocal booth with a cardboard box and some foam. That was fun. I spent £800 on an isolating vocal booth that does this, pretty much the same thing, but it was too isolating, and it sounded like I was in a submarine. So I think I found a happy medium now. I'm sure people have got comments about that, but I think sometimes DIY is the best way.
I agree. And if you are listening to this and you want to start your own podcast, remember, the wardrobe is your own personal cheap home recording studio. And I won't go any further on that.
Don't go too deep into Narnia because the forest is quite echoey.
No. Absolutely. I'm filled with weird shirts about high functionality. But what can we glean from these shirts? You are the hand adequate. You have high functionality. Are you enjoy spring? They all seem to be like really bold, weird statements, right? Whereas in English shirts, we tend to just have like a simple word, don't we? Rather than a phrase or a statement or a question. No,
Florida.
What's your interpretation on that? Florida.
You just have place names, Florida or the university that you went to. I did go to New Orleans. I've been in New Orleans like four times. I love that place because I like to drink. And it was, I got a t-shirt that said, I didn't buy it, but a friend bought it for me. I got bourbon-faced on Shit Street. I got shit-faced on Bourbon Street. Obviously, Bourbon Street is the big place where all of the bars are, where every single band plays just the same song every single night. Right. All of the same songs, all of the time, in every single bar. And it's, what was it? Not Motown Funk. What's it? Little
Uptown
Fella.
Funk. Uptown Funk.
Little fella, Uptown Funk, him. They just play that all the time.
Brilliant. I love the way we've gone from shirts to wardrobes to New Orleans, but we now arrive. Basically, I found this really bizarre news story this week, and I there's no way we can lead into it. Usually I like to lead seamlessly into the news of the week, right? But I don't know how to do it, and it involves a man. It's the sort of title you'd expect to find on April the 1st, right? On April Fool's Day. The title is Man Arrested After Having Slashed Over 1,000 Women's Tires to Get to Know Them Better. Like you do.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, there's no way beating around the bush. Basically, 43-year-old woman in Aichi Prefecture was coming out of the store once in June. And she noticed that a tyre had gone completely flat. She pulled over at the side of the road, and while she was checking it out, this other driver pulled up, this 32-year-old bloke called Yoshito Harada, and he offered to replace her damaged tyre, and she was very impressed. Oh, what a nice young man. Until she remembered that this exact same event had happened 1 year prior, in June, a year before. Unsettled by this coincidence, as you would be, having your tyre slashed 2 years in a row, she went to the police and sort of said, what's been going on? Who slashed my tire? They checked the surveillance footage and they found that the culprit was none other than Yoshito Harada himself. And it turned out what this guy had been doing was going to supermarkets, going into the car park, slashing tires of various cars belonging to women, and then following them down the road, coming as this sort of savior to try and help them, try and chat them up a bit and get their number. And then he just kept doing that, and he did it 1,000 times. And it's ridiculous that he was so daft that he did it on the same person twice. But it's a testament, right, to how many times he'd done it. If he'd done it 1,000 times, he probably wouldn't remember that he'd done it to that person 2 times in a row. But he got rumbled, he got caught, and they discovered he'd been doing this since 2013 in the Aichi area. And Aichi's around Nagoya, right? And in the end, he had to pay 30,000 yen to every victim that came forward. Thankfully, in his favour, I don't think 1,000 people came forward. But what a situation. The sheer desperation, Pete, the sheer desperation of wanting a date and having to slash people's tyres. What do you make of that?
Ridiculous. At the very least, it's a terrible story for the kids. How did you, mum and dad, meet? Well, your dad's a dreadful person, apparently. I think featuring it on, a fun podcast lends it probably the levity that it probably doesn't deserve, because it's a pretty rancid bit of work from that block. But I always sort of find that, like, I think the way that the West and the way that if you want a sort of snapshot as to how I'm going to use the word subjugation as well, or how women don't have a great time in Japan, is read the comments from Japanese people about stories like this and Rocket News and a few of the kind of like Western facing Japan news sites. There'll always be like some commentary from people who've commented on Twitter or on Facebook or whatever in Japanese. And I don't think any of the responses to this story were like, this man should be locked up. He's a fucking danger. He's a menace. He's this dreadful individual. It was all just like, oh, he must be really desperate to find a date and stuff like that. And it's like that. It's the canary in the mind for me. It's indicative of bigger problems, isn't it? But yeah,
absolutely.
A strange way of going about things. Maybe I'm coming from a place that a man who's only ever changed a tie once. It's an arduous and miserable thing to do, and I wouldn't want to repeat it at the side of a busy motorway.
I just think, I don't know, it's just a bit... I mean, the craziest thing is, right, he did this to this woman twice in a row, right, 2 years running.
And it's only because of her bravery and her thought that has got him caught after so many times doing this.
Absolutely. Yeah, a lot of crimes don't go reported in Japan because people just don't want the hassle, right? It just looks bad for you sometimes. But apparently, back in 2013, he'd done the exact same thing. Like, he'd slashed someone's tire twice in a row and got caught the exact same way. Hadn't learned his lesson, just carried on doing it and got caught again for the very same thing. And he's got off with it just by paying a little bit of money. I mean, it's kind of bizarre. It's kind of creepy, isn't it?
Yeah.
He never, from what I understand, he never harmed anyone, apart from those beloved tires.
Could have really hurt somebody.
At the same time, as someone who's desperately looking for a plot for a short film, that is kind of a story that could work, isn't it? Or is it too mental and too bizarre that I could have no moral or no narrative structure because it's just so ridiculous? I don't know, but I might well use it. I'm desperate for ideas.
I mean, he's definitely the bad guy. I wouldn't make him. He's not even a flawed maniac like, you know, Tony Soprano or the bloke out of Breaking Bad. You know, he's not. There's no redeemable features at any point. He started bad and can only redeem himself. He's not someone you can kind of think. Oh, I could see why he did that. It's just mental.
I mean, it depends on the perspective. Who would the protagonist be? Would it be one of the women who had their tires slashed and then it would be kind of like a horror film or a thriller? Or would it be a psychological study and the guy himself, what's his name again? Yoshito Harada would be the protagonist and we could,
or it could be,
hear from his story.
He was in the pocket of big tires.
He was employed
by... a big Good tire year. Group, Yokohama Tires. Is it Yokohama? Do they have tires? I don't know.
They do have tires.
That's a tick from me. Yeah, he could be in the pocket of Yokohama Tires.
There you go.
Get more business.
And that is who we could get to sponsor this short film, this project. if you're still Harada's coming for your tires, get nothing but the best the next time around. Where his
He'll be there for ages.
Knife, where his pitiful knife won't damage the tire. There you go. That is quite a story. It reminds me. I mean, we've had over the years, right? We've been doing this, 2 years now, 3 years? Not even I remember. Crikey, it's 2 years. And in that time, we've had quite a few of these weird kind of crime stories, haven't we? Do you remember the guy from last year who burgled his own store? But
wearing like a mask.
He did, yeah. He was wearing a mask. He's wearing like a hat, a mask and sunglasses. And he walked into the restaurant, of which he was the very manager, and he said, give me the money. This is a burglary. This is a stick-up. Give me the money. And one of the staff just went, oh, Sato-san, is that you? And he like pulled off his glasses and was like, hello. Oh, and then he said, oh, this was just a test. You know, I'm not actually robbing you. This is a test to see what you would do in these circumstances. Great stuff. Good job. I'm going home now. And of course, he got rumbled because he was actually trying to burgle his very own restaurant. What a muppet. But that is another film for the making. What do you reckon?
I mean, yeah, that's definitely one of those kind of ones we spoke about before, that kind of like tragic comedic kind of character. I definitely watch that film, a man trying to rob his own store, planning it, kind of coming off the back of it and saying, oh, I've really muffed this up, going on the run. Lovely.
Sounds like a episode of Mr. Bean or something. But there you go. I mean, if you're a woman in Japan and your tire gets slashed, at least you know who it's going to be. And remember, he's in the Aichi Prefecture area around Nagoya. Mm. Bear that in mind.
Watch out.
He just wants a date, apparently. Oh, boy.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Without further ado, though, let's turn our attention to the fax machine. What have we got this week, Mr. Donaldson?
Well, guys, if you want to know how professional I am, I've managed to get through 19 minutes of this show without actually knowing what the running order is, because Chris actually sent over last week's running order before we started. I didn't have time to read it, and therefore I've managed to kind of like feel my way through the show without actually knowing what Chris is going to say next. That makes me an excellent broadcaster, and Chris Broad, that makes you a terrible administrator.
What's it?
I can't read anything else. You haven't sent it.
Oh, flip it out, you muppet. Why don't you tell
me? You're going to have to read all the emails out for this week's show. And then the next show, I'll do all the emails on that show. All right? So, look, these are coming at me. I don't know what they are. I'm reacting. All right. Pow, pow, pow.
There you go. You can give some sort of commentary and answer the questions then. Yeah. The first one is from Frederick. Yeah. And well done for blagging that, because I had no idea. You didn't know what the plan was. We do planning on these podcasts, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, Chris,
I sit down and plan them out. I send it to Pete and then we do it. And this week he was being a little bit clever, a little bit cheeky, and he got away with it. Well done, Pete. All right. Hi, Chris and Pete. I'm a listener from Sweden that quite recently found your podcast and have listened to around 50 episodes the last 2 weeks. Bloody hell, Frederick. That is impressive. Jeez. I apologize if this question has been brought up before. How was it to become a forced minimalist when you moved to Japan? Did you get rid of all your things, or did you just give all your stuff to your parents and stick it in their house? I think I remember you saying something about moving there with 2 suitcases only. Did that experience change you in any way? I have a goal to also move to Japan, and as a part of that, I've started to gradually get rid of a lot of my stuff. Almost gives me an endorphin kick when I drop another bag of stuff at the recycling centre. Keep kicking ass, Frederick from Sweden. And of course, you can't really answer that, Pete, unless you've done that.
Why can't
I? Have you done that?
I have done that, because obviously I moved from a two-bedroom house to a one-bedroom tiny little kind of office converted into like a bed city kind of. I had a separate bedroom and front room. But yeah, I've moved from a big house to a very, very small one. So I've had to several times through the last 5 years living in the centre of town in Soho, just get rid of everything. Just get rid of everything I can. I cannot hoard anymore. The only things left, honestly, I looked quite recently. The only things left that I've actually got are things I've brought from Japan that I wouldn't be able to get again here. So like Automatons, old 70s record players and stuff like that. So a lot of the stuff left in my house is just Japanese stuff.
Brilliant.
And also, my auntie Joan used to work. I think I've spoken about my auntie Joan on this show. My auntie Joan in Hartlepool used to work for a woman whose husband was a admiral, I believe, where I'm from in Teesside, big shipbuilding area, big naval area, kind of. And this guy was like an admiral, and he'd be coming back and forth from the Far East. And so none of the rest of the family are interested in heirlooms from the Far East, but obviously I am interested in Japan, and I visit the Far East quite a lot. Mm. And so my Auntie Joan, when she says she is going to pass, I've got a samurai sword waiting for me. So when she sadly passes, which is obviously very sad, even though I've said, Auntie Joan, honestly, don't worry about it. She's given me some odds and sods that have, like, some plates that have come from Japan from back in, like, the 50s and stuff. You know, not expensive stuff, but just copies of popular stuff in the era. But, yeah, I've got a couple of Japanese kind of plates and stuff that from out there, and, like, decorative painted wood blocks and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's... But I have got a sword coming, and then I will be one of those guys who own swords.
I'm actually quite frightened at the prospect of you having a samurai sword, Pete. What are you going to do with it? How are you going to use this newfound power, this weapon?
Try and get dates with monster truck owners. Going to slash their big tires.
I would love to watch that. You slashing a monster truck tire. Has it ever been done with a samurai sword? It will be seen. Frederick, before I came to Japan, I ditched all my worldly possessions. Went to a boot sale, like a car boot sale. What was it called in American?
Yard sale.
Yeah. In the UK, we basically go to a muddy field in a car. We get a little crappy table and we put all our stuff on it. And then people come and buy it, except they don't really buy it. They look at it. They go, I'll give you 50 pence. And you go, no, it's a pound. And they go, oh, you can fuck off then. And then they walk off.
It's a lot of like really bad haggling, isn't it?
It is. It's like British people are crap at haggling.
Miserable.
And it's just doesn't work. And I didn't have that many things before I moved to Japan, but I had a DVD collection of 100 DVDs, no less. And I sold, I think, about 80 or 90 of them for about a pound each and netted myself 90 quid. Which is about Ichimayen, which is enough to have about 3 McDonald's meals. Now, you could have about 10 McDonald's meals with that when you're in Japan. So that's what I brought over. And yeah, I mean, I didn't really bring over a lot. And then when I lived in that apartment, my first apartment in Yamagata, I tried to keep it empty of possessions. My parents are both hoarders. Like, they keep things that don't need to be kept, so like broken pencils and rubbish everywhere. They got like a weird hoarding problem, like a lot of people. Except I suspect theirs is more extreme. So I'm the antithesis to that hoarding problem. So living in a tiny apartment, first off, I try to keep it as empty as I can, devoid of objects. And I like that. I kind of like having not much clutter. Mm. And because I did grow up in that environment where my parents keep things that don't need to be kept, I feel like I need to get rid of everything. So I know the endorphin rush. I know it, Frederick, the endorphin rush of getting rid of things. It's just fun. I like bidding things. But that's my thoughts. It's nice. You feel clean.
You do.
Fresh. I love it.
I agree. Completely.
And when I leave this apartment, I'll bin everything again.
And I'll bin you.
Bin you. You're going as well. But yeah, no, I like the idea, though, of having all my key key things in like two suitcases. I always like that idea. At the same time, when I, in recent years, now that I'm getting on, I'm a man of 30 years old, I'm an adult now, I feel like it's all right to have possessions. I feel like you need those possessions. It's all right to have a home. So I've started getting more stuff. And if you watch the Abroad Japan channel, if you see the videos, you can watch my bookshelf get more and more cluttered with each and every episode. So I'm turning into a hoarder, becoming the very thing I swore to destroy.
Hoarder.
You're not a hoarder, are you, Pete? You're not a hoarder.
No, I am. I am a massive hoarder. I attach sentimentality to everything. I've got, from my Japan trips, I think I've got every single Japanese rail pass I've ever used. And I've been like 10 times. Ridiculous. Stupid. Idiot.
Brilliant. Still. At least you'll have a sword. At least you'll have a sword. I can't believe I've got to read all the things out. Blimey. Hi, Chris and Pete.
Sorry, mate. Got to do a bit of work.
How dare you? Right. My name is Hannah. My name is Hannah, and I'm writing from the UK. I've been listening to the podcast and watching your YouTube channel for a while, and I'm currently planning a trip to Japan. I was wondering about how good Google Maps is for getting around in Japan, seeing as I rely on this frequently when traveling. I'm asking as when I visited Seoul in South Korea in December 2019, there was literally no walking directions to get around, and I had to download one of South Korea's map apps. Is this similar in Japan? Thank you for reading. Hannah. Do you know why that is, Pete? Do you know why the Google Maps is rubbish in Seoul?
I reckon it's probably got something to do with North Korea.
Whoa. Spot on. Yes.
There we go.
They, from what I understand, I mean, I had the same problem. I went there, couldn't use my maps. I was gutted. Mm. I live and die by Google Maps. And yes, you can use it in Japan. It's very good in Japan. You get train times, bus times, everything. But in Korea, it was kind of stripped down version that didn't really work because apparently when North Korea invades, which hopefully won't happen anytime soon, they didn't want them using Google Maps and various map apps to get around and navigate, which is quite a bizarre reason. You'd think that wouldn't really be an issue, but apparently that's the reason. I think you swear by Google Maps, though, don't you, Pete, when you come to Japan?
Yeah. Google Maps is the number one app. I think sometimes if you are looking for an authentic Japanese experience or a more authentic Japanese experience, consider using, if you're looking for a particular kind of restaurant or bar, find the kanji for bar or restaurant, and you will find that there are more options available to you. Because if you are searching for the word in English, it is only going to find, in by and large, it'll skew more heavily to well-rated places that have been visited by foreigners before, which invariably turns you into someone who finds themselves in just basically expat bars and expat restaurants and stuff like that. So it's actually quite nice to sort of go off the beaten track a little bit, find the kanji for a particular kind of restaurant or particular kind of bar or experience you want to do, and it'll be a bit more fun, I think.
Absolutely. And I always use Google Maps whenever I'm going to a bar or restaurant just to check that it is good. Like, I was chatting with my good friend Ian, who you know, Pete, and you guys might know.
Yes, lovely Ian.
Ian joined us on Journey Across Japan. Without him, it wouldn't have happened. And he's a good friend. And we were chatting about a bar in Tokyo, which I won't name it because I don't remember the name. And also, I don't want to get done for defamation. But he went in a bar in a really trendy part of Tokyo, and he said he suffered like just the worst, most unpleasant racism he's ever endured. And it was a really nice, trendy, high-end bar. And the owner was just like shouting at him and his friend and being really mean. And Ian thought, this was very odd. What's going on? And then he looked on Google Maps and all the reviews, the place is like a 1 star out of 5 review. And they're all like, I walked in, I received the worst racist treatment I've ever had. I get the impression he doesn't like foreigners in here. And the reviews are a joy to read. They're so funny and quite awkward and comfortable reading. I'll have to dig it out for the next podcast because it's just...
Is it not one of those kind of like theme bars in America? You have theme bars. I think it's like Someone's Last Resort, I seem to recall, being one of the brands, where you'll go in for a bit of food with your family and the waiting staff are employed to abuse but also serve you. And the more they abuse you, the more you tip and stuff like that. So maybe there's a certain level of performance in there that he's just really pitched massively incorrectly.
It's either a wonderful bespoke performance or unpleasant racism. And I think it's the latter, judging by the reviews. I've got to dig that out. I'll dig that out for an upcoming podcast and read out the reviews, because some of the stuff that people endured was just horrific. And
wow,
we even joked about making a video there, but I suspect the last thing I'll be able to do in that bar is whip out a camera and start filming. We've got a question from Curious Man. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. Just wondering, how's the update on your plan to make another movie or documentary on Natsuki's smoking habits? Still very much planning it out for later this year. I've got a few more projects with Natsuki in the pipeline. Actually off to do a Treasure Island style video with Natsuki next week, just off the coast of Yamagata.
Lovely.
There's an island, which I think I've mentioned to you before, Pete. I think I can't remember if I tried to take you there, but basically about 1 hour off the coast of Yamagata, near where Natsuki lives, there is an island called Tobishima. And it's very small. You can walk around it in a couple of hours. But apparently there's buried treasure there because there used to be some pirates in the Sea of Japan, and they used that as a place to store it. And the premise of the video is Natsuki is a little bit desperate because his business hasn't been doing overly great in the face of the coronavirus. You think he's doing all right now, but he didn't have a good few months like a lot of business owners. And he has a sort of desperate attempt to try and get some money. He wants to go to this island and dig up some treasure. And so that's what we're doing next week, sailing off into the sea, sailing off to this island and trying to find the buried treasure. But that's it. God. That's what we've got currently with Natsuki. Should be a lot of fun.
You have to have a parrot and an eye patch and all of the accoutrements for Natsuki. That's what the people want to see, Chris. That's what the people
Absolutely.
Want to see.
Absolutely. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And we've even bought Natsuki a pirate's hat and an eye patch because
yes,
that's what he demanded. He was like, well, I'll do it, but you've got to buy me a pirate costume. And I was like, okay, you'll get your pirate costume. Don't you worry. We have a question from Jake. And he says, hi, Chris and Pete. Hope you guys are doing fantastic. I have a question regarding Japanese itself. I've been studying intensely for months, and recently I found it not to be enjoyable. Before, I would wake up with loads of enjoyment and motivation, ready to learn. But now, it's starting to feel like a chore. Any tips for a self-studier that could help re-spark the joy in learning the language so that I have something to look forward to in the mornings? Thanks a lot. Keep up the amazing work. Jake. That's a good question, and certainly one that I think a lot of people can relate to. How do you stay motivated to learn Japanese, Pete, on your shower?
In my shower. In my shower era, I book flights to Japan so really? That I know that I've got something to look forward to and a reason to keep studying and all that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very much the sort of person who books a flight, gets all excited, and the excitement manifests itself in trying to learn a few more words. But I understand that's not possible for everyone, but that's certainly how I've been, you know, learning about Japanese, I know.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? I was super motivated to learn when I first kicked off, when I first lived in Japan. I was super motivated because I was in an environment working in a job where I needed to use it and I knew nothing. And so I felt a lot of pressure to learn. And then I got to a point where I could talk about anything roughly with anyone. It wasn't, you know, native level conversation, but I could get by, and that's how it kind of stayed. It plateaued my Japanese for years. And then this year, actually, for the first time in, I don't even remember the last time I studied Japanese, probably like 3 years plus ago, I started studying about 2 or 3 months ago, and I'm really enjoying it. And the reason I found some new kind of newfound motivation, I guess, was two reasons. One, I realized after being here for 8 years, I just feel a bit embarrassed that I can't speak better Japanese, right? That I'm not at native level or towards that point. So I felt like there's that sense of pressure, right, to actually be here. Because if I say, oh, I've lived here 8 years and my Japanese isn't up to scratch, I feel embarrassed by that. I feel like you've always got to try and make an effort if you're living in another country to master the language. And the second reason, and arguably the most important reason, is I want to do more videos this year where I'm spending time with Japanese people and interviewing them and getting to know them and to really open up conversation and possibilities and, you know, have really interesting interviews. It's just better to do it in Japanese. So that's another reason. So I can converse naturally and fluently with people like, I did a recent video on a sushi restaurant, which I'm working on, about what it's like to own a sushi restaurant. I got another one about a Wagyu steak restaurant, who you've been to actually, Pete. Isao,
oh,
The Rock. going to interview him and spend a few days with him. And I just feel like it'd be better if I could communicate in Japanese, right, rather than switching to English backwards and forwards. So you've really got to have a practical use. If you're going to learn a language, you need to use it practically to have that real motivation, not just have a little side hobby, because otherwise you will just lose that sense of purpose. So like Pete says, Jake, just come to Japan or find someone you can talk to in Japanese, like a friend nearby or someone online like iTalki or HelloTalk, loads of apps these days. But just, yeah, that's the key way. And then you can be like Pete, coming back to Japan and incrementally, slowly but surely, getting better at Japanese, like you,
bothering
Pete, right?
Chris. Yeah, bothering incrementally.
But there you go. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into Abroad in Japan podcast at gmail.com. We'll be back same time next week to do it all over again. Although we won't, will we? Because I've just realised the schedule.
Yeah.
We'll do 2 weeks. I'm getting used to it.
I know,
right?
I don't
know what day this is coming out. I don't know when the next podcast is, but it's probably in 5 days from now. Is that right, Pete? You're the master of dates. Help me out here.
That will be indeed the case. So yeah, it'll be on Sunday next show.
Right. We'll see you on Sunday then. Rise and shine.
Bye-bye.
See you on Sunday. Bye. Thanks for listening, guys. See you then.
A Stakhanov production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.